Mother's Day is this Sunday, and my guess is that Claudia Quigg will be getting a lot of attention. Besides being a mother and grandmother, Claudia has been helping other parents get the support they need for their own child rearing. Claudia Quigg is the founder of Baby Talk, an organization that offers a model for child rearing support. Launched in Decatur about a quarter century ago, Baby Talk now has affiliates in cities spread out through more than 36 states. In addition, Claudia is the author of Let's Talk Kids, a long-running column on child rearing that runs in the Decatur Herald and Review and on Springfield Public Radio station WUIS. Some of those columns are now available in a new book. I'm Jim Meadows, and Claudia Quigg will be my guest today on Focus. We'll be talking about Baby Talk and how the organization developed, and we hope to hear about your parenting experiences as well. Focus comes your way next after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. Claudia Quigg's new book is called Let's Talk Kids, Becoming a Family. It's published by Bronze Man Books. It's not so much a Dr. Spock-like manual on child rearing as an observance of some of the very typical situations that parents and children encounter. And there's a certain celebratory quality to some of the writing, in my opinion anyway, noting how wonderful these situations can be, even though they may also be worrisome, exhausting, are frustrating. Claudia's book collects some of her Let's Talk Kids columns that she's written over the years, and I'm happy to have Claudia Quigg as my guest today on Focus. Claudia, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Jim. I'm delighted to be on your program, and happy Mother's Day to all your listeners who are mothers and grandmothers.
Yes, yes, indeed, and happy Mother's Day in advance to you.
Thank you.
Now, of course, we'll also be talking about the Baby Talk organization that you founded. I'm wondering, which came first, writing the column or founding the organization?
The organization. Baby Talk has been around for about almost 27 years this fall, and I've been writing the column for about 8.5 years.
Okay. Well, we welcome you to the conversation as well here on Focus. If you have questions or comments for Claudia Quigg, call in and tell us about it at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL or toll-free 1-800-222-WILL. And you can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we welcome your questions on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. Claudia, what got you interested in this subject of child rearing, that is, child rearing outside of raising your own children?
Well, way back in the 70s, I got my master's degree at the U of I in early childhood education. And at that time, there was a real focus on the child from 3 to 7 in early childhood. And I kept asking the question, well, what happened to them before 3 that makes them like they are at 3? And so that has been a question that I've spent all the years since trying to find answers to. And it's actually been a very exciting field to work in because the brain development research that has come out over the last 2 or 3 decades has given us so much great information about how the experiences that young children have in the first 3 years of their lives really do lay down the architecture of their brains in a way that impacts what kind of life they're going to have for the whole rest of it. So it's an area of study about which I have great interest. And then after I did my graduate work, something happened to me personally. I had 3 small children in a very short period of time, and I found out how really hard it is to raise your kids and the demand for energy and wisdom makes the job that parents do a real challenge. And so when you combine the fact that it's hard to do but so important to do right, you can see why I'm pretty motivated to give support to people who are doing it.
I'm wondering, because parenting is something that people from all walks of life do, what was the most challenging area, and have you found that other parents find the same areas challenging, or is there a difference from parent to parent?
Well, every parent is different and has unique challenges, of course, but it's amazing to me how universal some of the challenges of parenting are. If a dad with a PhD meets a dad, a 15-year-old dad who dropped out of high school in the park, and they both have 9-year-old children, they are going to have a lot to talk about because the experiences of parenting kind of cut across those socioeconomic dividers that often separate people. You know, if your baby's been crying for 3 hours, it really doesn't matter how many college degrees you have or what kind of a car is parked in your driveway. These experiences are so universal in nature that one of the fun things about my work is that this is an arena in which people can be united around similar challenges.
Well, I'm wondering, is this, and this experience, is this what inspired you to start Baby Talk?
Sure, absolutely. My personal experiences combined with my professional study certainly combined to give me that idea.
Well, I take it you were looking for support yourself. Who did you turn to at the time?
Well, you know what? I had, you know, a supportive husband and supportive parents and lots of friends and neighbors and faith community. And I still sometimes felt like I'm not sure I'm doing the right thing. And so I really had a lot of support. And as I look around at families, I see a number of parents who are very isolated, and I can't imagine how hard that would be, because as somebody with support, I still felt like it was hard.
Is this sort of a phenomena of modern times? If we went back a few decades, do you think parents would find more support more naturally just among extended family or community?
Absolutely. Societal changes have isolated families in a way that they weren't in the past, although I would propose that sometimes even having family around you is not particularly supportive if you have family members who want to promote their own agenda with you or who don't appreciate your opportunity to make decisions about your own children. So there are also challenges in having extended family around you, but certainly a network of support as well. And we don't have as much of that today as we did 50 or 100 years ago.
Well, what's the original idea with Baby Talk? And maybe you should note, I guess, Talk is also initials for a longer title?
Yes, Teaching Activities for Learning and Knowledge. And our big idea in 1986 was that we would visit every family in the hospital obstetric units and give their baby a book, let them choose a book to start their baby's home library, encourage them about how important their influence would be on their child, and see if they had some needs that the community could meet. And we still do that in Decatur. Every family that has a baby, we still visit them 6 days a week at both local hospitals in Decatur, and many Baby Talk programs around the country also do that. But we soon discovered that that wasn't nearly enough, and so many other services have grown out of our desire to make sure that families have what they need to be successful with their young children.
Now, the meeting with the new mothers in the hospitals, are these the newborn encounters that I saw mentioned?
Absolutely,
on the Baby
yes.
Talk website.
And now we do a whole lot more than we did in 1986. Now we use the newborn behavioral observation that was created by Dr. T. Barry Brazelton, my good friend, who is at Harvard Children's Hospital, and he developed this over the last 40 years, where you look at the behavior of a newborn and get some cues into his personality and his style of doing things. And we sort of discover the baby together with the parents, and it's really a joy.
Now, there's a video of, I guess, what would be a typical newborn encounter on your website.
Yes.
And what I was struck by was just how low-key it is. If anybody was maybe just feeling a little worried that somebody was going to come in and you know, all of a sudden with all these new instructions about what they should be doing with their baby. I did not get a sense that was going on.
Not at all. We really believe parents are experts on their own children, and our job is to support and facilitate them. And we actually do a whole lot more listening than we do talking.
But I take it then the person who comes in, and first of all, who comes in? What sort of background and qualifications?
We have a staff of people who are trained to do this. And they all have at least a bachelor's degree in nursing or teaching or social work. And then we do the training for how to do these encounters.
And what are they what are they looking for? What are they observing when they're meeting with the mother and the newborn?
Well, they're observing how sensitive the baby seems to be, because that's really good information for a parent to have. Is this a child that I need to be kind of careful about his environment, or is this a child who's really good at shutting out noise, shutting out light? They look at the baby's reflexes, which are, of course, universal, but it's so reassuring to parents to see that their baby's kind of wired up the right way, and so that's pretty exciting for families. And then probably the most interesting part of the encounter is we have the parents call the baby's name, and we call the baby's name, and guess what? The baby always turns to the parent. It's so exciting to see, and parents feel like, oh, my gosh, he knows me already, and of course he does, you know. So our job is to really affirm the parent-child relationship and assure parents that they do have the tools they need to give their kids a good start.
This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're talking about early child care with Claudia Quigg. She's the founder of Baby Talk and the author of the Let's Talk Kids feature, which runs in the Decatur Herald and Review and also on Springfield Public Radio Station, WUIS. If you have kids, maybe you'd like to talk about what resources helped you keep your sanity when they were young, and we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 333-9455 or call us toll-free at 1-800-222-9455, or you can email your question to will-talk@illinois.edu. The program you're describing now is started in Decatur, and besides those newborn encounters, what other services have built up over the years?
Well, we do lots of things for families, and some that have particular appeal to middle-income families who maybe just are eager to find a group of other parents and children to socialize with. Kinder music classes, come sign with me classes for parents who want to teach their baby American Sign Language, which, you know, research tells us gives babies some early experience with language and enables them to express their needs. And then for families who may have challenges, we have more intensive programs. We have an alternative high school for mothers who have not finished high school yet, who can bring their babies with them to school. And we have a family literacy program in which parents can work for their GED or can learn English as a second language and, again, bring their babies along with them. And we do lots and lots of home visiting on families to give them support right in their homes where they are working with their kids.
And what sort of services have parents told you that they're looking for? Are there anything that you've set up because of, you know, a particular interest or demand?
Actually, everything we do because it was first requested by parents. For middle-income parents, you know, people are seeking a new circle of friends when they have a child. They want to have friends that they can share that experience with. And if you talk to people my age, often they'll tell you that their best friends are still the people they were young parents with. So it's a time in life where people are looking to put down new social connections. So we've heard that a lot. So we do offer a lot of programming that provides that parent-to-parent kind of support. And our teen parents have told us that they need help to be able to finish high school. You know, the number one reason that people drop out of school if they're female is a pregnancy. And we really want to support parents to be able to be self-sufficient, and the only way they can do that is by completing their education. So everything we do really has grown out of expressed parental need.
Has that been a growing or constant phenomenon over the years of Baby Talk Indicator, of teen parents and single parents who, especially because of that situation, don't have all the resources that they might have if they were parents later in life?
Yeah, I would say it is a growing phenomenon, and I would also say that our capacity to support it is growing.
By which you mean that you've been able to expand your services?
Right, yes. Yeah, we devote more effort to supporting that population, seeing how vulnerable they may be.
Well, how large has the organization become in Decatur?
You know, in Decatur, we have more than 70 employees, which is, you know, I tell people that and they're surprised, but they're not all full-time, but we're delivering a lot of services to families.
And what sort of budget does that require?
We're about $2.5 million.
So how do you raise that sort of money?
Now, that's a tough question. We have federal funding and state funding, and we also depend on some of our corporate partners, like Archer Daniels Midland is a great partner to us, and then lots of individuals make donations.
So this is a program that you've been able to grow over the last, I guess, quarter century. I assume it started as something relatively small, but now...
I was the only employee.
Are you still directly involved in programs that are in Decatur?
You know, I am. I'm still the executive director, and love every chance I get to have an encounter with a parent and child.
Now, I'm wondering, I understand this program, this model has been replicated by other programs in other cities?
Yes, we have the Baby Talk Learning Institute that provides training and support for other people in other communities who feel the same need. And we, for many years, actually, we have been doing training, and you know, Illinois is not the only place where parents need support, and so we have been really happy to be able to share what we've learned and to learn with other communities as well.
You mentioned there's not a complete list on the website, but you say it's programs on this model are running in more than 36 states.
Right, and in Illinois, of course, because we live in Illinois, there is a preponderance of programs here. There are more than 112 publicly funded programs in the state of Illinois using Baby Talk as their curriculum and their approach with families.
Now, they're not necessarily called Baby Talk.
Exactly. Right.
How do people search these programs out, especially if they don't know what the name will be?
Good question. I do have a list, and very soon that list will be on our website. We're putting together a map on our website so that a parent could click where they live and see if there's anything near them, but that's under construction right now. But anybody could call me, and I could answer that question for them.
Okay. What's a good number or email address to try to contact you or somebody at
okay.
Baby Talk about this?
Our number is 217-475-2234. And my email address is cquigg at babytalk.org.
Let's go over to the column that you write. And is it running only at the Herald and Review?
Nope, it's in three other papers as well.
Which ones are those?
Well, it's in the Quincy Herald Whig. It's in the Daily Mountain Eagle in Alabama.
Wow.
We have a lot of Baby Talk programs in Alabama. And then it's at a small town in Illinois. And I'm sorry, I don't know the name of the paper. I just know the name of the person I email it to.
So three Illinois papers and one in Alabama.
Yes.
And also on public station WUIS.
Yes.
And they're online at WUIS.org, so your columns can be heard over there.
Right.
Now, what got you started writing about early childhood?
Well, I've been doing a lot of writing for a long time. I've written many materials for parents and papers for professionals. And about 9 years ago, the editor-in-chief of the Herald and Review had seen something that I had written. I think I'd done a guest editorial for the paper, and asked me if I would be willing to do this. And at the time, I thought, oh, my gosh, a weekly deadline, really. But I've been doing it ever since. I've never missed a I've never missed a week, and it is a discipline to be having an otherwise already busy life and to have a weekly deadline. But I really enjoy that discipline, and it's given me the opportunity to connect with some people that I otherwise would not have had the chance to.
Do you see it as an advice column, or how do you approach this project?
I don't see it as an advice column. I see it as an opportunity to kind of pull out one tiny item about living as a family for people to reflect on and maybe be inspired by or maybe have a chuckle over. But I don't like to give advice because, you know, advice implies that I know and you don't. And that really kind of goes against what I believe, which is that parents know things about their own kids that nobody else knows.
So you don't see yourself as, say, a Dr. Benjamin Spock sort of
authority? Well, you know, Ben Spock said that parents know best, too. So, you know, he was moving in this direction before he quit practicing. So people who really study families are coming to understand that giving advice really just doesn't work, but getting people to just think about things and reflect on things sometimes does.
How does that work? Is that something you can give an example of where there are things that the parent can work out just by, you know, paying attention to the situation?
Oh, sure. I will never forget a family coming to see me who had a baby that was crying in the night. And they had gone to see their doctor and asked their doctor, what should we do? Our baby's crying in the night. And their doctor said, well, you just need to let that baby cry it out. And they came to see me, and they were really distraught, and I was trying to figure it out. And I said, so you heard the doctor say you should let your baby cry it out, which is something that a lot of people have done and have found to be successful. And I looked at him and I said, but it seems to me that you're not thinking that would work for you. And the dad looked up with tears welling in his eyes and he said, if we do that, we will be evicted from our apartment. So, I mean, they had some really important information that the person who gave them advice didn't have. And so I'm always aware that parents know some things that I don't know. So if I can get them to talk about it and think about it out loud, maybe we can find a solution together.
Well, what is a solution in a case like that where some practical consideration blocks what might be the conventional wisdom in this case?
Right. So I think that those parents have a lot more work at nighttime to do. They really can't just let a baby cry it out. They shared with me that they were looking for another place to live, and ultimately that will be the solution. But in the meantime, they are going to have to try to teach their baby to sleep, but not through letting him cry it out. So, you know, every family has to create a plan for their challenges that makes sense for them.
I'm struck by it. In the book, in Let's Talk Kids Becoming a Family, there is a column you have about colicky babies, and
yeah.
I'm actually struck by it. Just sounds like such a 19th century term. You think there would be a long technical name for babies who cry for a not clearly identifiable reason?
Right. And you know what we used to think that it's called colic because we used to think it was a stomach problem, and now what we know is that most babies who cry and have a fussy kind of crying that isn't because they're hungry or anything you can, or in pain or anything you can identify, it's usually because of a central nervous system that's gotten overstimulated, you know, too much stimulation. And it's pretty interesting to note that in 1915, only 15% of babies in America had this kind of fussy crying. And now something like 85% of babies in America do. And I think it's because we live in a very stimulating world now. So you can usually track fussy crying to a baby being a little bit overstimulated.
And what is it that overstimulates a baby?
Well, it depends. If a baby is passed around a lot, from one person to the next, a baby that's in like three or four or five different care situations during the course of a day, that can be overstimulating to some babies. Having the television on all the time, that's really overstimulating for a whole lot of babies. So electronic noise, not being sure of who's going to be taking care of them next and having to be hypervigilant, that's overstimulating for babies. So lots of things that as adults we don't even notice may be really stimulating to a baby.
And in some ways the extra attention that a baby gets when he's crying or he or she is crying this way may bring on just more stimulation.
It may. Sometimes colic escalates because a baby stimulates himself so much. But often crying is a way for a baby to discharge some stress. So what you often see is a colicky or fussy period in the evening to prepare a baby to be able to have a little longer stretch of sleep at night, for example.
Okay. Well, it's time for a short break, and we'll be back with Claudia Quigg and more about baby talk and helping parents during the early stages of childhood. This is Focus on WILL. We are back on Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. My guest today is Claudia Quigg, and she writes about early childhood for the Decatur Herald and Review, also newspapers in Quincy in Alabama, and for WUIS Radio in Springfield. And she is the founder of Baby Talk, which helps bring services and information to parents. You can call us with your baby stories, problematic or otherwise. Call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 for a toll-free connection. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Focus580. The book, Let's Talk Kids Becoming a Family, does talk about childhood, maybe I should say parenthood, in stages. I was wondering if you could go through a few of the stages that you outline in the book.
Sure, I'd love to. So the title Becoming a Family is sort of reflective of the process involved in people bringing a child into their life. So the early part of the book is about pregnancy, or there's also a column about parents who are waiting to adopt. Because there is that same kind of preparation period for them, even though they aren't physically experiencing pregnancy. So a lot of really important things happen to people when they are when they know a baby is going to be coming into their life. So I find that that is a time of reflection and kind of reevaluating their lives. You know, they may decide they have to move, or they may decide they need to change their lifestyle or have a different job or change the way things work in their home. So pregnancy is a really important period of time, and so is the anticipation of an adoption in a lot of the same ways.
Is there a mental process going on during pregnancy? In some ways, I can understand with the mother because there's something really biological happening there.
Yeah. And for fathers as well. In fact, you know, the more research they do about fathers during pregnancy and childbirth and early childhood, they actually have discovered at the Fatherhood Institute at Yale University that men produce the same female hormones that their partners do when their partners are pregnant at just a slightly lower concentration. So as you chart the production of hormones through pregnancy, childbirth, and the first few months of a child's life, men's hormone levels mirror the very same path.
That's interesting. We don't know why that happens, do we?
Well, I think that I'm not sure why. I think that it has to do with the man's sharing the experience with his partner. But many men experience pregnancy in a profound way. And I've seen so many men who have re-examined really becoming an adult, because until a man has a child, in some ways he can remain sort of childish himself, and anticipating becoming a father is a point of real change for a lot of men.
And so that the period of pregnancy can really be a period of development for the expected parents.
Absolutely. You know, they some people think of pregnancy as a time where, you know, in the beginning you're just adjusting to the news, and then in the middle part of pregnancy you're thinking about how this baby will change your life, and then at the end of pregnancy you really start focusing on who is this individual that we're going to bring into our world. And parents usually have two babies in their heads. They have a dream baby, the baby they hope for, and they also have a baby that they fear, you know, a baby who could be damaged or have a health problem or something. So most parents have both of these babies in their heads in the latter part of their pregnancy, and then the baby is born, and they have the real baby to deal with. And getting to know that real baby is another time that parents experience tremendous growth as they come to know this new member of their family.
So with the programs that you offer, we were just talking about the fathers alongside the mothers. Are there parts of the Baby Talk program and model that that target the fathers particularly?
You know, we don't target fathers. We just include them in everything. So we want them to just be recognized as a critical part of their child's attachment system. So I've noticed a lot of dads who have become friends with other dads at some of our programs. So I guess we don't do anything specific for dads, but instead just include them in everything.
Now, I understand that in the years since you've had your own children, that you have also become a grandmother.
I have.
What has that meant for your understanding of parenthood and child rearing?
Well, the main thing it's meant for me is just absolute delight at seeing the kinds of parents my kids have turned out to be. They don't do everything exactly the way I do it, but they share some basic values with me, of course, but they are just so unique and responsive to their kids, and it's really fun for me to watch how they manage things.
Now, is that part of it, the role of grandparents and other extended family members, does that play a role in the programs of Baby Talk?
It sure does. You know, every person who is committed emotionally to a child is a real asset for that child. And so having grandparents included is, you know, just really adds to all the resources that a child will have. And lots of grandparents are very interested in Baby Talk and in how they can support their grandchildren.
And that raises a question, because we were talking earlier about connections and assistance that parents maybe used to have but don't have so much anymore, and perhaps part of that is the extended family.
Exactly. And, you know, there are a lot of people who don't live in the same town as their extended family. So grandparents who have grandkids in other towns, I think, have become very creative in finding ways to be involved in their lives, you know, Skype and FaceTime and all, you know, the technological supports for families have been wonderful in that regard. But if your baby is crying or if your toddler is throwing a tantrum and you're tired of dealing with it, it sure is nice to have an extended family member a few blocks away who could drop by and give you some help.
And what is it like when you're the grandmother instead of the mother, in being called on to provide that help? A mother has to do it, no matter how cheerful or energetic they're feeling about. But what's the role like for the extended family member?
Well, I think that it can be a joy. It can also be a pressure if grandparents feel that their kids have to do everything the same way they did it. And I do sometimes hear about gatekeeping that happens between parents and grandparents who both believe that their way is the only way. And it, as you know, it can really lead to a stressful relationship, and it's not good for anybody. But we have to recognize that whenever two adults love the same child, there's going to be a little bit of that. So for grandparents, you know, my suggestion is to try to take a back seat, try to celebrate and enjoy the kids without feeling like you have to run the show.
Does Baby Talk deal with situations where the parents are single, but the father, for instance, may still be involved, or perhaps the parents are divorced in early childhood?
Oh, sure. You know, there's every sort of family constellation raising kids, and they can all work. It's critical for adults to, of course, put the needs of the children ahead of their own. But I've seen every sort of family work well. And, you know, I'm learning more about, you know, how we can support families from the LGBT community who are now more and more raising children. But all sorts of families can work for kids. It doesn't really matter what the structure is, so long as the child can depend on the unconditional love of the adults in his life.
You just brought up the phenomenon of same-sex couples raising
yes.
children. Are there particular questions or needs that come up in those situations?
You know, I think they're finding their way, and I won't pretend to be an expert on it. But as I say, what we know about kids is they need adults they can count on. And, you know, is there a question about, well, will they have role models of both genders? And, you know, I think that most families would make sure that they had that. You know, if two women were raising a child together, I can imagine they would engage an uncle or a grandfather or a male friend at some point to be a great role model for a male. But I think that how families work that out is very individual.
We are talking with Claudia Quigg, and she is the founder of Baby Talk in Decatur, a program which has affiliates in about 36 states or more across the country. I don't know, are there particular regions of the country where you've seen the most growth?
Well, the Midwest, of course, is the heaviest just because of the proximity. But as I say, we have wonderful programs throughout Alabama. That's been really fun to watch.
Alabama has really been a growing area.
Yes, University of Alabama is kind of our hub, and lots of programs there.
And besides the Baby Talk program and its affiliates, you've been writing a column for the last few years called Let's Talk Kids. It's in newspapers in Decatur and Quincy and Jasper, Alabama.
Yep.
And also on WUIS, the public radio station, in Springfield at WUIS.org. And now there's a book of those columns, Let's Talk Kids, Becoming a Family,
yes.
from Bronze Man Books in Decatur.
Yes, and can I tell you a little bit about Bronze Man Books?
Absolutely.
Milliken University is a private university in Decatur, and I am adjunct faculty there in the early childhood program. And they have a publishing business that is staffed by professors and students from the fields of writing and design and marketing who publish books every year.
So it's sort of a learning experience for them?
It is, but they have published some very successful books. And this one that they have published with me is actually the first in a series of three. There will be two more. This one is about pregnancy and infants and toddlers, kind of the things that happen in the first years of life. And the second book, which I'm just turning now in my manuscript for, that will come out early 2014, is going to be called Facing Family Challenges. And it's more about the hard stuff, you know, discipline and sibling rivalry and some of those things. And it's across a larger age span of children. So, and then the third one will be about the assets that that families give to children. So I'm excited about this series of books.
What's been the response so far to the first book?
It's been wonderful. And because of the focus on the beginning of life, I cannot tell you the number we have sold to people who are expecting a baby. Because, you know, during pregnancy, people do a lot of studying and thinking. They have more time to read in pregnancy than they will after their baby's born. So the response has been great. I think we're already talking about a second printing, so I'm excited about that.
Still time for your questions and comments with Claudia Quigg here on Focus at 333-9455, or toll-free 1-800-222-9455, our email address will-talk@illinois.edu. Going now to line one to Eileen in Urbana, and good morning. You're on Focus.
Thank you. So happy to hear Claudia Quigg on the radio. As an early childhood professional, it's been a concern to me for many years that there have been very few programs like this on WILL, and I would encourage your program people to listen and to perhaps bring on Claudia's program to Champaign-Urbana.
Okay. Well, duly noted. And Claudia, I'm wondering, are you only on WUIS radio at this point?
I am, but they have started uploading my segments to PRX. So
that's the public radio exchange.
Exactly. Yes. So we have had some other stations contact us and run, you know, one or two or three of the columns or the segments. So I know there's a way to share those things electronically.
Okay. Eileen, is there a shortage of this? Is it just us, or is it media in general not picking up on these needs for parents and kids? And I think Eileen, if you're still with us.
Yes.
I was wondering, do you feel there's a shortage in general of these materials out there in the public eye for people to use?
Do I think that?
Mm-hmm.
There's not a shortage of materials. Sometimes I think it's more a shortage of people knowing where to access them.
Okay, so that's the important thing, is getting it out there so that they know it's there.
So that they know it's there. And also I think there's another important thing for Claudia to mention, or for me to mention, is that many of the early childhood education programs in the state, like the state pre-kindergarten program and the programs for infants and toddlers, are using Claudia Quigg's Baby Talk. And it's a testament to the high quality that those programs are providing. And when people think of cutting back on those programs, they just need to know that the children and families are learning some of the things as you are hearing today.
Well, Eileen, thank you very much. Claudia, that's a testimonial, certainly, for the Baby Talk curriculum.
Thank you so much, Eileen. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Eileen. And I'm wondering, when we're talking about funding for programs like Baby Talk, you must be affected by the problems with state funding right now, by cuts and the delays and the arrival of funding. How has Baby Talk in Decatur been dealing with that?
Well, you know, over the last 4 years, every year, the state of Illinois has cut the early childhood block grant every year. But this year, they are hoping for level funding. So we are hoping that the hemorrhaging has been stopped now, because there are a number of programs that have gone away completely, and every program has had to reduce the number of families it can serve. So it's really been a problem. We on the federal level now, infants and toddlers are getting a lot of attention. So I hope that a brighter day is coming.
And you mentioned that about infants and toddlers getting a lot of federal funding attention. And that brings me back to something you said at the beginning of the interview, and that was when you were starting as a childhood professional. I get the impression they didn't pay as much attention to that stage of childhood.
Exactly. We just did not understand how important those earliest years were. Benjamin Bloom was most famous for saying that infancy was a buzzing, blooming confusion. And we know that's not true now, that infants are far more competent than we used to think, and that the experiences they have really matter as they are creating the architecture of their brain that will govern how they are forever. So a lot more attention given to this age group than was in the past.
Let's go to another caller on line one. This is Peggy in Urbana. Good morning. You're on the air on Focus.
Hi. This is all so interesting. I have friends who have babies who have problems, and I wonder, is it possible we could have something in the News Gazette, some information, a column or something about this? And I'll hang up and listen. The Champaign-Urbana News Gazette.
Thank you very much, Peggy. Your column right now appears in Quincy and Decatur and down in Jasper, Alabama, and another Illinois newspaper. But you haven't cracked the Champaign-Urbana market yet.
I haven't. And in my experience, of course, I'm not a real aggressive marketer, but in my experience, newspaper editors want to carry what the readers want to read. And so all of the papers outside of Decatur began because people in the community went to the editors and said, we really want this column. So I would suggest that if Peggy feels that way, she should give a call to the News Gazette.
Okay. And what sort of subjects, you have to do this column every week. Have there been particular subjects that have been exciting you right now?
Well, I'm always interested in subjects related to daily life of families, but also, not just how to get through the day, but finding meaning in the day. And I was just this morning reminded by somebody who had read one of my columns that's in this book, called Kairos Moments, about the important moments that occur in the life of a family in which they really make meaning that changes them and creates memories and really contributes to a child's sense of who he is. So I love thinking about those. I have one segment in this book called The Story of the Day that I was inspired to write by a young dad who told me that every night at bedtime, he told his kids the story of their day, starting with when we got up and what we had for breakfast, and kind of walked through their day with them and sort of tied it up with a ribbon at the end of the day. And I think what an amazing gift that was for those kids to have a dad who helped them to make sense of how their life was going. And the dad also used that as an opportunity to kind of reframe something that happened. He talked about one day a little boy named Sammy was really mean at preschool, and so as he retold the story of the day, he could say, and today Sammy had a hard time at preschool. He didn't say, Sammy was mean to me at preschool. He said, Sammy had a hard time at preschool. So the next day at school, it would be easier for that child of his to face Sammy and maybe be more empathic with him instead of just being mad that he'd been mean the day before. So I love hearing about how families are making real meaning in their lives with their kids, because that's where the riches are.
So you're able to draw a lot of stories just from other parents.
Sure.
No shortage, it sounds
Absolutely.
Like.
Absolutely.
Do you have any, have you done everything you've wanted to do in this area? Do you see new areas for growth and expansion that you're hoping for?
Oh, gosh. I wish I was that thoughtful about it. every day seems to bring an opportunity that I'm excited about. I'm doing some training really kind of all around the country about newborns, and I enjoy that a lot. And I'm excited for more people to understand the opportunities. And looking forward to where the next 50 years take us with what we learn about what kinds of supports we can give families that really make a difference.
Okay. Well, I wanted to thank you very much, Claudia Quigg, for talking with me. The web address for your for the Baby Talk website is babytalk.org, and there are links over to your Vimeo and Facebook and Speaker Deck pages over there. How do people find the book, Becoming a Family?
You know, it is for sale at Millikan University, and it's for sale here at Baby Talk where I work. They can call and we can take their credit card information over the phone, 217-475-2234, or they can mail us a check. And the book is also available on Amazon.
Okay, Amazon always, and then the number at Baby Talk is 217-475-2234.
Right.
Well, our guest today has been Claudia Quigg, author of the Let's Talk Kids column in newspapers in Decatur and Quincy and in Jasper, Alabama, and at WUIS Radio in Springfield. And a collection of her columns has been published by Bronzeman Books called Let's Talk Kids, with more books to come in that series. And Claudia is the founder of Baby Talk, which helps bring parenting services and guidance to parents at babytalk.org. Claudia, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate you inviting me.
Welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program at will.illinois.edu/focus. Friday in Focus, it's back to lawn and garden care with University of Illinois Extension horticulturalist Sandy Mason and lawn care specialist Tom Voigt. Today's show produced by Lindsay Moon. I'm Jim Meadows. This is Focus on WYLL.